Almost an hour, 50 big minutes every afternoon as we look at culture, current events, and our Catholic faith. Thursday afternoons, we are joined by Father Michael White of Church of the Nativity, up at Timonium, Maryland. We'll be talking to him. The Rebuilt Church, as we know it, the Rebuilt Gang up there, who now have all kinds of terrific resources for parishes, and they're always doing something fun. So we'll talk to him coming up in just a moment. And by just a moment, I mean later in the hour. Also interesting things to talk about with the immigration proposal, or some would say executive order mandate that was issued by our president being shot down in a tie from the Supreme Court. We'll look at that. Also, some interesting things happening in the tech world with Apple doing away with the mini jack on the new devices. No more headphone jack. What does that mean? Interesting what Apple does sometimes, right? So we'll get into that. And also what Michelle Obama has to say about men and how we need to be better, apparently. We'll talk about all of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back in a moment.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Follow me over on Facebook. Post a lot of the things we talk about on the show over there. Always invite your comments on anything that you see on the Facebook page. Some things get wildly popular and we talk a lot. Other things, no responses and tumbleweeds blowing through. Or the urban tumbleweed, which I call the Kroger bag, right? The grocery bag that blows through. Which Kroger is big in parts of the country, and then it's King Supers in other places. Wegmans, I think my favorite of all grocery stores that you find up in the Northeast, which, my goodness, amazing. Amazing grocery store. Or Mike Allen talking about Aldi this morning. Aldi, first time I discovered this store was in Australia, and now we got it here, which apparently Aldi owns Trader Joe's, which Trader Joe's is another one of those. So any of those bags, actually, I guess the Trader Joe's bag won't really work, or the Aldi bag, it's considerably different, but those lightweight drugstore grocery bags that will sometimes tumble through the streets like they are tumbleweeds. So that's maybe those roll through my posts at times. But apparently Led Zeppelin has won the lawsuit to prove that Stairway to Heaven was not plagiarized and an original composition from the beginning. Now, what I said about the interesting photo of the three remaining members, Robert Plant, John Paul Jones, and Jimmy Page, is, wow, if you look at the three of these guys, to me, and maybe it's just a really good photo of Page, I'm thinking maybe he did sell a soul to the devil, right? Because he looks way better than the other two. He's held up, aged much more gracefully, I suppose. So congrats to Led Zeppelin, one of my favorite bands of all time, with victory in court. Now, who apparently has not seen victory in court, and I guess time will tell as far as how this plays out ultimately, are those affected by this immigration policy that was proposed in more or less a executive order by President Obama, and then because of the challenge against this, the constitutionality of a move of this nature, it was presented to the Supreme Court for a hearing. And it seems to have more or less died in this tie. So this reform proposal that essentially said there are many here living that are certainly with children, in many cases, who are American citizens born in this country to illegal immigrants. There's a way to provide amnesty, protection, and the opportunity for these families to stay put. Now, I don't know when the last time there was any deportation. I don't know exactly what the government does. I know we had the big case, my goodness, what, 20-some-odd years ago with, was it Elian Gonzalez, the Cuban refugee child, immigrant child, being physically removed from his American residence, taken back to Cuba. But there's been a lot of concern, a lot of talk about this, and certainly a lot of angst over the fact that there could potentially be disruption of families, disruption of livelihoods. And, you know, this is one of those areas as Catholics we have to look at and realize that our faith calls us to something very different than what politics may have to say. Even what Supreme Court decisions may have to say. And this is tough. I get it. It's tough because there are those who want to always basically bemoan the immigration issue and say, well, we simply can't afford this. We can't keep doing this. And it's not that, from what I've seen, I'm going to speak anecdotally. I'm going to speak from my experience because our community, and especially my neighborhood, very close to the neighborhood in which I live, therefore my grocery stores and places of businesses are, by and large, caters to a Hispanic community. What I see are very hardworking individuals who are here to try to make something better for themselves. They're not here to come and live off of social services. They're here to find gainful opportunity. That's generally what I see. And it's not the stereotype, if you will, of those who want to come here and rape and pillage, which, as we know, has been kind of a hallmark of the Donald Trump position on immigration. And the oddest of all comments, when Mexico sends their people, they send us these rapists and robbers. When is Mexico sending anybody here? When did this happen? Now, maybe their economic conditions force people across the border. I don't think Mexico's sending anybody. They're not, it's not like this is Australia, right? And the British government has said, you are exiled to Australia because of your criminal life, you're going to go there. Which is kind of cool about Australia, right? I mean, I've always been fascinated by that. I think there's something, there's a rebel spirit, right? Which we know, I mean, a lot of the U.S. was the same way. Not necessarily those who were exiled, but those who could not find a place in their home, wherever that was. And they thought, well, here's a land of opportunity. We're going to risk it all to travel across the sea to this place that is mythical and magical, and who knows what is awaiting us, but we're going to go. Because at least we have hope there. We have an opportunity to do something there that we have not been able to do here. There's beauty in that quest. And that quest continues. That quest continues for those who seek something of opportunity by coming to this land of opportunity. Now, we're not, as Catholics, we don't take this pragmatic approach of saying, well, utilitarianism is what we're all about, and if people can come here and provide for themselves and create industry or create some opportunity or take the jobs that other Americans don't want, then, well, then there you go. We'll do that because it's good for us. That's not the attitude that we need to have. Although, like I say, I believe, especially from Mexican immigrants, this is what we see by and large. Very strong work ethics. Very strong family values. And in many cases, very strong Catholic ethics. But it's not about that. It's not about how can we bring people in who will benefit us. It's about how do we respect the dignity of each individual. And there's all kinds of fear, right? All kinds of fear. Well, if we allow this, then this is going to happen. If we allow this, then that's going to happen. You know, all of this crazy stuff about the Muslim immigrants, the Syrian refugees primarily, the Shiite Muslims, by and large, who were welcomed into various parts of Europe. We had this interesting story coming out of Cologne, Germany. I still question the substantiation of that. Now, you can say, Leo, you're a Muslim sympathizer, blah, blah, blah. Yes, I am, right? I'm a sympathizer. I'm a sympathizer of anybody who is put in a place of unfair discrimination. I will sympathize. I will do that, undoubtedly. I believe my faith demands that, quite frankly. But the byproduct that no one seems to be talking about, and I've tried to share this with the haters, is that many of these individuals are now converting to Christianity because they've seen something beautiful in the expression of others' faith. They've had a compelling conviction, and now they are embracing a lifestyle that is a lifestyle of opportunity that they see because they've been introduced to that. They would not have been introduced to that had they not been welcomed as refugees into Christian areas. It's not what everybody is afraid of. These refugees did not come to enact Sharia law. They were escaping this. They were escaping this very fundamental approach and execution and lifestyle of the radical Muslim that forced them out of their homes. And for some reason, we get this big blanket of, well, this is what Islam looks like. Really? I don't think we understand it. Well, the Quran says this. Well, you know, the Bible says a lot of stuff as well. And as Catholics, praise God, we have a catechism. We have a magisterial teaching that says this is how to interpret that stuff. Because if you want to pick and choose and pull things out, we can get kind of really interesting. Get into Levitical law, for example, right? And Christians could be accused of, well, you guys just want to impose Levitical law. Or what about Catholics? Well, you guys just want to impose canon law. Because, right, we have canon law that rules many of the decisions. Look at marriage. This is canon law stuff. So I think we got to think about that old adage of pointing the finger and having the others pointing back. So that might be what's happening here. More to come. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith. 50 minutes every afternoon right here on BreadBox Media. Thank you for joining us. Talking about the challenges when it comes to what we've seen with the Supreme Court decision regarding immigration, where this goes is going to be hard to know, I think, at this point. But do know this, I posted it over on my Facebook page. Russell Simmons, Def Jam founder, the highly prolific and influential musician, producer, with an interesting message about us being together as people. When We Speak Up is what it is. It's over on my Facebook page. If you want to take a look at that, you'll see what it's about. And I think important stuff to consider as we think about the impact of things of this nature. And again, that the human dignity being the first and foremost consideration. Not necessarily who was here first, but what is this ultimately all about? I've been critical on my Facebook page and on the show regarding libertarianism. There are those who say that I don't know what I'm talking about. It's kind of like when I talk about Aristotle, right? And I say, you know what? Aristotle taught me what real virtue looks like. As a Catholic, I couldn't get it. I really couldn't get it. I know that sounds crazy. I thought it was, you know, the extreme opposite of vice. However opposite I could be. And, you know, we hear the Chesterton Minutes and we hear Dale Alquist talking about, you know, there are those who get in these extreme modes and they want to protect animals. And the next thing you know, that it's only pit ponies. And then it's like, well, they will do anything to protect the pony. That means any kind of degradation of humans. It doesn't matter because the ponies are so important. Right. And we get to this, and I guess it never really dawned on me what that meant, that this is this spiral, this vicious cycle of just getting into more and more vice, right? The vicious cycle. We say that all the time. I don't think we even know what it is because we think we're getting so virtuous, right? I am so, so virtuous. I am so extremely against anything that is vice that we become vicious while trying to be virtuous, right? The vicious cycle. And I was there. It was like an awakening of scales falling from my eyes to see where I had gotten in my viciousness. Because it was certainly vicious. Vicious against certain attitudes or beliefs or thoughts or ideologies or philosophies. I would have a vicious attitude toward that. And it really took this, again, this awakening to understand that, you know what, that's not where it's at. That's not what vice is about. That's not what virtue is about, forgive me. If it looks like vice, it's not virtue, right? Now, of course, those of us in the middle of vice, we justify it. Sometimes we're blind to it. I was blind to the fact that I was so in such a pursuit of virtue that I was becoming vicious, I didn't know. And so that's my problem with libertarianism, because it's this attitude of we have got to be so full of liberty. Liberty is the ultimate. You've got to have freedom. Freedom to do what the heck you want, when you want, with the adage of, as long as nobody gets hurt, right? Well, exactly who governs that, right? Who might not be getting hurt and who might be getting hurt? Who decides if all the only measuring rod is liberty? Now, I think we have to have liberty, but there's a balance and a reason and a logic and an understanding of a respect for those who could potentially be infringed by our unfettered desire for liberty. you know, and I know it's a slippery slope. It's a straw man. You go ahead, accuse me of everything. But, you know, where does it draw a line? Does it hurt anybody if I choose not to wear clothes? Does that hurt anybody? If I'm so intentionally bent on my civil liberty that I should not be restricted to clothing, right? I mean, if we take libertarianism to its end to say nobody's really hurt by that. Now, I would argue that some would be severely scarred, right? There could be emotional scarring. And in some cases, there, if it's the right individual who decides to go naked, there could be leading others to temptation, perhaps even sin. Not that you would worry about that with me, but I'm saying that that could happen. So where do you really draw this? This is why we have a democratic republic that says, you know what, the people have to elect individuals who then, in a good working order, has a degree of checks and balances with the branches of government that hold everything. I mean, there's been criticism of the Obama administration. Said, well, look at this president with his executive orders. Well, look what the Supreme Court did. Right? The court kind of did what they were supposed to do in the sense of holding the executive branch in check. So it kind of works. Whether you like the results or not, the system is a system that works. So where do you go with libertarianism? And this comes down to a post that I was posted in, that I was tagged in this post, regarding apparently state legislation in California that could potentially infringe upon the religious liberty of schools, because there's a push for more, a general sort of approach without this specific kind of religious education. Now, I see this kind of stuff, and as my response was, this is the proverbial tempest in the teacup as I see it. Let a state do this, or try to do this. And again, we don't have a confederacy, nor do we necessarily have a federalist government. We have a democratic republic that says there's only so much autonomy within the state. There is autonomy within the state, but only so much. So should a state enact something that is undoubtedly unconstitutional, not to the state's constitution, but maybe even then, but to our federal constitution, now we have a way to say, wait a minute, we've got a judicial system that can then hold the legislative system in check. So this is blatantly unconstitutional if this is something that someone would even remotely suggest, because it goes directly against the religious liberties that are afforded in our Constitution. And again, as I question this, and I may be wrong because I don't have a working knowledge of every Supreme Court case in the history of the Supreme Court by any means, but from what I gather, there have been many not only landmark, unanimous, total, 100% in accord decisions by the court regarding religious liberty, but in every case of religious liberty that has gone before the Supreme Court, it always rules in favor of the Constitution, which is to uphold that religious liberty. I might be wrong, because, again, I don't know the full history, but from what I've researched, it looks pretty good on the side of that constitutionality. So to fear this, and then to use the position of, well, this is why we all need to be libertarian, a little bit crazy. I think I'm getting close to time, if I'm not over already, but we'll be back in just a moment with Father Michael White. This is Leo Brown Almost Hour. Thank you.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit BreadboxMedia.com.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost our culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Thank you for joining us. Follow me over on Facebook. You'll find the topics that we talk about on the show there generally, but not always. Like, I don't have anything about summer activities in your parish, which is what we're talking to Father Michael White of Church of the Nativity about this afternoon. Father, how are you?
How you doing?
Doing terrific, thank you. It is summertime, is it not? Officially now.
It is summertime. That's right, yes, just this week, right?
Because we call summertime like any time after Memorial Day, right? We kind of think, oh, it's summertime, but it's not really.
Culturally, I think that's true, and I think experientially, especially when it comes to church attendance, it seems
right.
To be true.
Now, why is that? Why? I mean, I understand that people do take vacations, but we go to church when we're on vacation, right? I would think that wherever someone is traveling to, the churches should be fuller at that point.
Well, I suppose they tend to be at beach resorts and mountain resorts, they sure empty out in a lot of our parishes.
Do you think all of those individuals are traveling? Do you think they're really traveling, or they're just like, I got some yard work?
Yeah, I think that for a certain class of people who consider church a responsibility and obligation and really nothing more, that when they take a break from some of their activities in the course of the year, like school and such, they take a break from church too.
Yeah. You know what I experienced, and I don't know if you've ever seen this dynamic in the Catholic Church, but as an evangelical for 5 years, it was inevitable when the senior pastor was on vacation, no one came to church.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, they knew they weren't going to get the same show, right? I mean, he's gone. His substitute. Who cares, you know? And literally, so he started not announcing his vacations, because he would usually, he's like, okay, I'll be gone next week. And then he realized it was going to be such a drop in attendance, and he said, okay, I'm just never going to, it's just going to be a surprise when I'm gone.
Right, and a drop in attendance also means a drop in
donations.
Collections.
Exactly, yeah, collections, yeah. So, but yes, it was an interesting dynamic, but it was so much hinged upon him, which, you know, that's kind of what you get in the evangelical church. You've got the cult of personality there. So, So what should we be doing, or what are you guys doing in the summertime?
Well, I think summertime is a great time for churches to get ready for the fall. And so a lot of the people on our staff are very busy at work in terms of planning curriculum for religious education and adult faith formation. It's a time when you can do some special stuff that the regular course of the year won't accommodate, like missions trips. Mm. We have a mission trip going to Kenya. We've got one going to Haiti. We've got a number going to Appalachia. And, of course, we've got some mission trips right here into our own city of Baltimore. So summertime is a perfect time to do that. It's a great time to get students, teenagers involved, because time can be very heavy on their hands when school's out, and they can make better use of it through activities here at church. So we've got some things going on for our teens, too.
No. So specific things that are going to get them connected in ways they normally wouldn't?
Exactly. And I mean, just basically getting them up off the sofa, you know, away from the TV.
Yeah. That's always a positive. That's in positive momentum, right? If you can keep it moving in that direction, that's good. But are these just like ways to get them, because they're available, to get them helping, or are there programs, kind of discipleship programs, things of that nature? What exactly?
Both. Okay. Both. We do both. They're projects around here, just physical labor projects mm-hmm. that we get them involved in. It's a great time for cleaning out closets in the garage and storage areas and refreshing classroom spaces and mm-hmm. such. But also just to get them out for fellowship and for physical exercise and hiking and mountain climbing mm-hmm. and such.
Yeah. Yeah. That it worked for Pope John Paul II when he was Bishop of Krakow, right? So he was always leading those kind of groups and doing things like that with kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, we have a construction project going on here mm-hmm. This summer, so we're very immersed in getting that launched.
So you're putting the kids to work over there? You give them hard hats and get them on the construction
no,
site?
No. We can't. Much as they might like to get into that, yeah. we can't let them do that.
But at this point, you're seeing good activity? You think are you satisfied with what you're seeing? Are you happy that you got things that people are doing, or are you kind of seeing the drop away as well?
Well, we definitely see a drop off, and I think the bigger your church gets, the bigger the swings seasonally. Attendance hinges on congregations' affluence. In more affluent congregations, people have more money to travel, and they do. So that impacts you, too. And the weather is a third factor.
Mm-hmm.
A rainy Sunday is a good thing. A sunny Sunday is a not good thing.
Really? So you'll see the attendance will be higher on a rainy Sunday because they're not outside doing stuff in the yard.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Wow.
But all that said, we definitely go to great pains to make sure that summertime doesn't feel like we've taken off.
Mm-hmm.
That if you make the effort to come to church, that you're going to have a great experience and your family's going to have a great experience. And one other note on that, summertime is the prime time when people go church shopping.
Hmm.
So they're looking for churches for the church they're going to go to in the fall.
Right, sure.
And if you have a great experience and, you know, your music is of the consistent high quality that you want it to be through the year, and whoever's preaching is really bringing their A game to it, then you have an opportunity to really reach some unchurch people.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good way of looking at it. Father Michael White with us this afternoon of Church of the Nativity and the rebuilt resources, the many resources that are there. And we talked last time about this kind of this association of sorts, right? So if somebody wanted to mimic or get some help doing things that you guys have done successfully, you've got that opportunity now, right?
We call it the RPA, the Rebuilt Parish Association, and we are definitely all about helping other churches because we have been helped by other churches, and we want to pay it forward. So we're happy to share our resources, what we've learned, what we know, what works, as well as a lot of our content, you know, just homilies and homily series that we've had, small group curriculum, kids programs, and you know, the list goes on.
Mm-hmm. And so far that's going well. You've got a good response to that.
It's growing. It's about 3 months. It's about 3 months old at
okay.
this point.
And I would call that very new. Very new.
We have about 100 parishes in, I think it's like 25 different states,
wow.
Canada, Australia, and a couple of spots in Europe.
My goodness, wow. Well, I mean, to be 3 months old and to have that kind of response, that sounds strong to me.
I think it's very strong. It's very positive. And I invite all your listeners to come and check it out and see what we're talking about. It's Rebuild Association. We just launched a new website last week.
Okay. Well, that's great. And I guess it's kind of like many of these sort of programs, you can kind of take what as much or as little as you want kind of thing. Is that how it works?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I often hear the response, well, you know, we can't do that in my parish.
Mm-hmm, right.
And that's fine. That's fine. Not everything that we do here at Nativity is transferable to every setting. But there are lessons that we've learned that we can help you see, too. And we're sure that much of what we do is transferable.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the simple things, and this is what I remember from reading Rebuilt, and again with my experience as an evangelical, just having a welcoming environment, which, you know, mm-hmm. you could say, well, we don't have screens, we don't have a band, we don't have this, we don't have that. Well, you know, what if you just put people at the doors and maybe even out in the parking lot to be hospitable? If you did that,
right.
how much of a dynamic...
It would change everything.
That in and of itself, right? That may
it
be
would
all
change everything.
To.
Yeah. You don't need any additional income. You don't need any additional staff. You don't even, you know, need a lot of effort and time from the staff that you have. We can all do that.
No. And they don't necessarily even have to be wearing matching T-shirts.
That's right. That's right.
They could.
T-shirts help.
Or a smock of some sort they could throw over, right? Anything that they're wearing. Could do that. But that's
we could do that.
It doesn't necessarily have to be. Because, you know, that would be, well, we don't have matching smocks, Father. Come on, we can't do that. There's always the excuse, right? But it's simple. It's simple stuff. And that's what I appreciate about what you guys have presented, certainly from the resources that I've seen. I haven't looked at the association website to see what's there, but I'm guessing it's all the good stuff that you guys have put out there over the years through Church and the Nativity to really prove that it can be done, right? I mean, I think that that's what's beautiful is that, you know, it's Gary Vaynerchuk, I don't know if you're a fan, he says, one is better than none. Right. So meaning right. any ounce of progress, any step in the right direction is moving in the right direction. It's better than not doing anything. And if parishes could simply just go, hey, you know what? Maybe it's simpler than we think.
Right. And the time for action is now. We've really got to be about rebuilding and renewing our parish communities.
Amen. We're out of time. It always goes quick. Father Michael White, God bless you. Thank you so much.
Have a great week. God bless you.
You too. Thank you. So we have time for this afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless.